Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Tripp Tillery. Tripp was born and raised in a suburb of Atlanta, Georgia. During his high school years, his parents divorced, after which Tripp lived with his mother, Susan. He graduated high school from Mount Perrin Christian School and attended Georgia College, where he completed a Bachelor of Science in Economics and met his future wife, Jessica. After college, Tripp entered the corporate world and worked in various roles of increasing responsibility for two organizations over 12 years. As he gained higher level experience, Tripp began to hope for a role that was more rewarding than simply maximizing profits, but nothing presented itself. Tripp had always been very close with his mother, right up until the day she suddenly passed away in August of 2022. Her death left Tripp shattered, wondering how he would move forward without his mother, mentor, best friend, and anchor. As an only child, Tripp was named executor of his mother's estate and was responsible for the myriad of administrative tasks during the devastating and emotional time of grieving her loss. His mother luckily left him with what she called her dead book, which provided instructions and relevant information for how to administrate her estate, removing some of the stress and burden and allowing Tripp to focus more on grieving. In 2023, with the goal of carrying on Susan's legacy of love, Tripp and his wife Jessica founded the Dead Book. Their mission is to help us plan for the inevitable and encourage society to talk about death more openly in hopes that we, and in turn our loved ones, are more prepared when our day comes. Tripp, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It is a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thanks, Dave. It is a pleasure to be here. You were dredged up some emotions out of the gate there. Sorry.
There is no need to apologize for emotion or tears. I facilitate a grief support group regularly, and we have one rule about crying, that crying is okay. That's why the tissues are out. And as far as I know, the flood insurance is always paid, so just let it roll.
Oh, I will do it. I guess was remiss in not bringing tissues today, but I can grab some should we need them. So,
not a problem. Not a problem. If you have to use your sleeve, hey, do what
okay.
You got to do.
As long as there's no judgment. I was always told growing up, don't use my shirt. So as long as we're cool with it, I'll do that.
We make room for everybody's perspectives, and there's no such thing as functional fixity. We can use a shirt as a tissue or anything. It's whatever's going to get the job done at that particular time. I have to say, we met certainly not by chance. We were introduced by a mutual colleague of ours, Tina Fornwald.
Yep.
And Tina introduced us thinking, you guys might have a great conversation. And during the pre-chat, you had me a dead book. I knew I was going to have you on the podcast the minute I saw dead books. And obviously, a lot of our discussion today is going to be focused around that. So
yeah.
My first question for you is to please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
Oh, gosh. We touched on a major one, obviously, during the introduction. But actually, a few of them, really, during the introduction. The first one was the divorce of my parents when I was in high school. You mentioned something in the introduction to the book you sent me about this grounded and rational world. I think that really, and it took years, probably. I'm in my mid-30s now, and I'm just starting to grapple with some of that baggage. But that was my first time kind of jumping over that precipice of everything's grounded and rational and orderly and makes sense to, oh shit, it's like, this is, my life's been kind of turned upside down. And what I thought I understood maybe isn't true. The next one being the death of my grandmother. I had grandparents pass away when I was younger, 6 and 8, probably. And my mom's dad actually passed away before I was born. But with my grandmother, she entered hospice and the call went out, hey, grandma's going into hospice, get up here so we can see her and say goodbye. And that, when I was younger, my grandparents passed away and they were a couple of states away and didn't really have any grasp on what that meant. I wasn't there in their final days. But with my grandmother this time, we were able to make it up there. We were able to hang out with her for a few days while she was in hospice and talk to her. And I think she passed away the day after I left. So we were there to see her through those final phases of her life here on earth before she transitioned over. And there were a lot of parts of it that were beautiful. All of my aunts and uncles came in, so my cousins were able to make it in. And we would sit around her bed and reminisce. And my mom and my aunts and uncles would tell stories, and they would sing for her. And we'd go out and get her junk food that she wanted. And just the humanity surrounding it was my first interaction of, hey, this is something that's beautiful. It can be beautiful. It was a celebration of her life here on Earth. And the time she spent, the people she touched. And that was transformative around with my views around death, I guess. At that point, I was early 20s. And that was a very kind of transformative experience. Fast forward 11, 12 years later, you mentioned in the intro, was the sudden and unexpected death of my mother. Her and I were very close. We always had been. We had just retired a couple of years before, and she was looking forward to traveling the world and being retired and just being able to live her life. Unfortunately, she didn't get to do all the traveling she wanted to do because she retired during COVID, but she was starting to get back into that. She had so much life left to live, and we had so many fun things to do together and so much to share into the future. And that one really rocked kind of the foundation of who I was in my mid-30s. You think you have things figured out. You've worked jobs. You've been in the workforce for 12 years. You're married. You've passed a lot of these life milestones, right? And something comes along and just chops your legs out from under you. It was really a transformative experience, and it poured down who I was as a person, and I'm still picking up the box to this day, really.
And we'll be picking up that box until the day we transition, because the growth and the metamorphosis doesn't stop.
Yeah.
Once we've opened ourselves up to transforming our perspective, more and more pieces come together that allow us to continue to refine that. And I could speak for me in the 21 plus years in the aftermath of my daughter Janine's transition, the person I was a week ago, I may not recognize because the transformation during that previous week may have been so stark.
Yeah.
Loss inevitably changes us. And you went through, with your mom, you went through two very traumatic events. The first one was a divorce of your parents. As kids, we expect that our parents are going to be together until death do us part.
Yeah.
And we never expect that our parents are going to separate.
Yeah.
And she raised you as an only child. And I know that bond very intimately because my mother raised me as an only child. Now I've discovered through the wonders of Ancestry.com that I have now a younger sister whom I've connected with. But for the majority of my life, I was known as an only child. And when my mother passed, it was a very traumatic event for me. But the other piece with the divorce, early experience matters. And secondly, sudden death, when there's no opportunity to do closure to the life, to share memories, that brings its own share of challenges and trauma that are unique to that cause of death. Yeah, I could see where that would have been life-altering for you.
Yeah. I guess we're in the unique position that we kind of share that. You were raised as an only child by your mother as well. And going back to your point about it's a constant fight, or it's a constant effort to pick up those pieces and rebuild yourself, that really resonates too. My wife was smart enough in the immediate aftermath of me losing my mother to say, hey, this was traumatic. You need to go see a professional and talk through some of this stuff and work some of this stuff out. And in doing so, I learned pretty quickly through our early sessions that I was in for that fight. I think as human beings, we want to get to something like this and have some sort of finite, okay, year and a half of this fight. I'm out of it and I'm going to be okay. But it truly is. It's a lifetime fight. And I'm not the same person I was, you know. It'll be 2 years and a couple weeks. And yeah, to your point, weekly, it's just that constant battle.
In the beginning, I did see it as a battle. Now I look at it as just part of the path that I have now been destined to walk.
Yeah.
Is that anything that comes forward to me challenges me to say, okay, where does this fit with my existing belief system? How can I use this to continue to grow? So it's become less of a battle now and more of an alliance with what life has to throw me. Not to say that I still don't experience the human emotions of sadness and of yearning whenever I'm missing my daughter.
And to your point, it's part of the human experience. And this type of stuff galvanizes us. And as much as it sucks in the moment, it does help us grow as individuals, right? And I mean, if we're not here doing that, why else are we here? If we're just going to stagnate at a certain age, that's the part of the human experience, is learning and challenging those beliefs and growing from adversity like this. If we all had it easy, what would life be like?
Yeah, there wouldn't be any challenge to transcend. There wouldn't be any learning to occur. We'd all stagnate. And we don't have any control over the challenges that we encounter in this lifetime, but we have control over how we respond to it and what we choose to find meaning as a result of those challenges. And it sounds like what you're doing, and particularly with the development of the Dead Book and the development of the Dead Book organization with Jessica, your spouse, I think you're on that path to finding meaning and purpose in the aftermath of the challenges with your mom's death. Speaking of your mom, and I always ask this of every guest who's experienced the loss of a very dear loved one. Tell us about your mom. Tell us what made her so special.
Oh, gosh. Here, I have a little picture of her actually right here. She does podcasts with me. Say hi, Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Say hi, Susan. Where do you even start with that one? She was one of those rare people, Dave, that like when you're having a bad day, she just kind of gives you faith in humanity. She was one of those special people that exist in the world that are relatively rare, that just make the world a better place, and they do it effortlessly. They don't wake up every day and say, my mission is to make the world a better place. They just float through life and do that. God, she loved to have a good time. Loved to have a good time. Her laugh could light up a room. We were on a flight one time, and when my grandmother passed away, we always went to my grandmother's house for Thanksgiving. And when she passed away, my mom called me the next year and she's like, hey, do you just want to start taking a trip every year? Like, let's just do something since we don't have that anymore, right? So we started taking a trip every year. And then when Jessica and I got married, Jessica would join us on those trips. So we were coming home from one of those trips and we were on the flight, and they had these cool coffee mugs that they were serving coffee with on the flight. And we're drinking the coffee and my mom looks across the aisle at Jessica and I, and she goes, these are really cool. And we're like, yeah, they are. And she goes, Jessica, put them in your purse. But no, mom, stop. She goes, just put them in your purse. It's fine. So she egged my wife on until we put a couple in Justin's purse, brought them home with us. I drank coffee out of it this morning, actually. But that's just who she was. She just liked to have a good time. She didn't take anything too seriously, right? She was the best mom, obviously. Probably tell through the bio and your introduction. She never missed anything. It didn't matter how, you know, trivial it was. If it was a PTA meeting or something, she was at every one of my baseball games. She hauled me all over the Southeast to my baseball tournaments. Not only that, excuse me, I have this character flaw that I'm a procrastinator. So I procrastinated all of my school projects growing up and had a tendency to spring them on her last minute. The night before something was due at 7:30, I'd be like, hey, I need to go to the craft store and pick up all this stuff because I have something due tomorrow. She wouldn't get mad. She's like, all right, hop in the car. Go to the craft store and pick up a bunch of stuff. And she'd stay up until 11:30 doing the project with me or sometimes even for me because that's just who she was. And that was after she worked a 10-12 hour day at work, right? She had this presence about her that calmed people. She never met a stranger. She could strike a conversation with anybody and learn about their lives and just bring this brightness to the conversation that it's hard to explain, but it's very rare that I see it. She just was this light in the world that I miss having that person. I could pick up the phone and call her with any problem, big or small. And she answered the phone every time, didn't matter what she was doing. And she just had the most sage advice to give. And just no matter the problem I was facing, just had the best advice and just put me at ease that everything was going to be okay. And I was going to get through it. I can go on and on, but she was always there for her people. I heard stories, even at her memorial service, and I knew of her before she passed away, of helping people out during a hard time in their life, whether it be monetarily to pay bills or whether they were going through a divorce. A woman that she worked with for a long time just walked up and gave me the biggest hug and said, I want you to know that your mom helped me out a lot when I was going through the divorce with my husband. She was just that kind of person. We joke that she had an extra 8 to 10 hours in a day because she was just always checking up on her people. She was just always there. She was always doing something. She was light in the world.
It sounds like she's just very special. And my mother and your mother would have gotten along famously. There's a lot of alignment between what you described with your mom in terms of values, personality. It's all right there. Somehow in the great beyond, I hope they have connected and are listening to the conversations that their two sons are having. So
I'm sure they are.
And if they float any critiques down, I'll let you know too, by the way. So
likewise, we'll touch base after.
Yeah, absolutely. So I understand your mom inspired the creation of the debt book, and I have a copy of it right here. It's like, here it is, if I can get it. I don't want to try to cover my face, but there it is right there, the debt book. So tell us about how she inspired its creation and what the debt book is designed to do.
So when my grandmother passed away, my mother was the executor of her estate. I left out that my mother was successful in her career. She was always volunteering. So she was in finance. So she had a kind of a mind for that kind of stuff. So she was identified as the executor of my grandmother's estate. My grandmother lived in rural North Carolina. When she passed away, my mother was burning up the road 6 hours one way to North Carolina to administer my grandmother's estate. My grandmother was infamous for being a little bit of a pack rat, and it took her some traveling up there multiple times on her weekends. She would leave Friday at 5 after work and drive 6 hours up there and just to battle to find some of this stuff. So the entire process took a toll on her. This period of months after all of that, she gave me a call one day and said, hey, come by the house. And I get there and she plops this book on the table and goes, this is my debt book. If anything happens to me, this has everything you're going to need. So immediately I'm like, okay, what's going on here? Do you need to tell me something? She goes, no. So she walks me through the book and everything, and I'm, you know, begrudgingly doing it. I'm like, okay, we got 30 years to figure this out. I'll deal with all of this stuff later, right? But her, being ever organized as she was, knew that whenever she passed away, I was going to be the one to have to deal with it. And she'd been through the administrative process before, and she knew how archaic and opaque and difficult it can be to navigate. So being the planner that she was, and being the loving, caring person that she was, she put this book together for me. On the day that I found her in her house, the police were finishing up doing their thing, and they asked Jessica and I if we need anything out of the house. So I asked Jessica to go in. I knew where the book was. Go to this bottom drawer in her office, get this book, and put it in the car. And it was immensely helpful to me during grieving the sudden loss of my mother and my entire world collapsing around me and just fighting to get out of bed, to have that book with everything I needed to also do the administrative piece of being her executor. Because that starts almost immediately. And I would not have been in any position to start that process and do what I needed to do from a legal perspective had I not had basically her executor for dummies book, I guess. So months go by, and, you know, Jessica and I are going through all the administration piece, and we're sitting on our kitchen island, and Jessica just looks up at me and she says, hey, a good number of her friends, a couple of her siblings have asked about what was in this book because they needed to do their own planning. And we've talked to some other people that haven't had any planning and thought it was a great idea. And we did some kind of market research. And this book that she put together for me out of the love of a mother, we could help other people with her idea. So we decided to take the book that she made for me and dress it up a little bit and augment it here and there, and put the dead book out into the world with the hopes of my mother inspiring others to plan and hopefully helping some folks out.
Well, that way too, with the dead book, your mother's legacy lives on through anybody who gets that book.
Yep.
But the other thing here, you're absolutely right, because at the moment of somebody's death or transition or passing, however families or individuals conceive the last moment of life, you're right. You're in no position to really start thinking of the practical estate management details that need to be done. You're processing your own shock. You're processing your own disbelief. You're trying to wrap your head around the finality of somebody's life. So having everything pre-organized in one place, I think, makes a great deal of sense. I think it also prevents families from engaging in those unnecessary conflicts about who's going to get which items.
Oh, gosh.
Who gets which part of the estate. And I think you have seen this, I'm sure, Tripp, and I have in the past, where families have just been torn apart because of over who's going to get whose things.
Yep.
And what they don't realize is when they themselves transition, they're not going to be able to take that material stuff with them. I know you have a section in the dead book for items that are going to be bequeathed, whether it be things like jewelry. All of that is covered, in addition to just the general estate planning stuff with wills, funeral service, everything is just that's outlined. And I'm planning on using that for my own, to get everything together for myself.
And
put it in one place to say to my son, here, when I go, when I start dancing in another dimension, here's what everything you need to take care of my estate, plan my funeral service, is right there.
Yeah. It takes your point. It just takes that unnecessary stress off of your family once you pass away. The stress of the actual administration and the legal aspects of it is one thing, but to your point, and this happened in Jessica's extended family, where someone passed away and the family members fought over something, an item, and caused a rift, and they didn't talk to each other for 3 years. No one, you don't need that stress and strife when you're
No.
Celebrating the life of someone who's just transitioned and left this world, right? Yeah, it's, and another added benefit is having the conversation with your son while you're still here. Hey, these are my wishes. Do you have any questions about the book? Do you have any questions about my wishes that are here? Just to clarify things, when the time comes, he's set. He's ready to go. He can just almost go on autopilot while he's celebrating your life and grieving your loss that you're no longer here.
The other thing too, Tripp, is that not only is the executor dealing with his, her, their own grief, they're dealing with the rest of the family members' grief as well too, because everybody's looking to that executor for direction. They're looking to the executor for comfort. Yeah. And having everything pre-planned and in one place, you're right, takes the stress. So it allows that individual to grieve while they're doing final arrangements and doing final disposition of estate matters.
Yeah, obviously the most immediate and pressing item is the memorial service celebration of life. And that can be full of potential pitfalls, particularly from a financial perspective. That can get expensive fast if you don't know what you're getting into. But yeah, that's another thing. Just having the final funeral wishes laid out, you just walk in there, say, I want this, this, and this. You're executing your loved one's wishes, and it takes all of the stress out of that.
You know, I was thinking, just because sometimes I have a warped sense of humor, it'll come out in certain situations. One of the things I thought about having my son do, if I were going to have a funeral service, is to recreate, I don't know if you've ever heard of the movie, The Big Chill.
No.
It was way before your time, but you could probably find it on some streaming service. But it's about a group of guys that go to their best friend's funeral. And a funeral service, there's a funeral procession, and in the background, the Rolling Stones song, You Can't Always Get What You Want, is playing.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that I might ask my son if he's up to recreating that scene of The Big Chill for me. But he'll probably look at me as if I got two heads, but just to get a reaction out of him.
Yeah. That's funny you say that. My mother joked for years, probably the better part of a decade, that she wanted a Viking funeral. She wanted us to put her remains in a wooden boat and push it out to sea and shoot flaming arrows at it and have a keg on the beach and have a party. And she said that for years and years and years. And she said, I'll leave you enough money to bail yourself out of jail because it's a felony. But if that's what you want, I'll do it. Right. Didn't make it into the will. She had other wishes, but it was funny to joke about for a while.
And as we're talking about, one of the goals of the dead book is to become, you and Jessica want people to become more comfortable talking about death. If you take a look at this conversation, we're smiling. We're joking a little bit. We're laughing. So we're, I think, approaching a very difficult topic, and we're not disrespecting it, but we're just making it easier to talk about.
Sure.
Why do so many people, from your perspective, in our society, have so much difficulty talking about an event that we're not going to be able to avoid in this lifetime?
I don't know. That could be an entirely separate podcast. My personal take on it is that people are scared to face their own mortality, especially in Western society, the U.S. in particular. My generation, and I think your generation, we were raised, you have no weaknesses, show no weaknesses. Mm-hmm. You have to be the best. You have to drive. You have to be better than everyone. You have to accomplish X to be successful in life. I think having that ingrained in us, to not show any weakness, prevents us from facing down our own mortality, because in a way that's somehow a weakness that we're going to die at some point. That's my take on it. Honestly, it would take a room full of professionals and they probably would never agree, but just the weakness of facing your own mortality and the uncertainty of what comes next. And I think it just scares the shit out of people. And they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty accurate take. And it's like talking about death isn't going to make you dead. It's just, but it's in my death, dying, and bereavement class, I tell my students, my goal is to get you to become comfortable talking about a topic that a lot of people aren't comfortable talking about.
Yeah.
And in order for me to do that, I need to tell them about my own history. I need to set the stage for that. But once we begin talking about it, they realize that it's not as fearful as they've made it out to be. Yeah. It's something that they realize is a part of life. And I think, like with your grandmother's journey at the end of life, that which was so beautifully orchestrated, for the lack of a better term, with all of her family, her end of life chapter was, if you look at it, an extension of her continued spiritual growth and development, and the spiritual growth and development of those who witnessed that. So that, in a sense, the end of life became a spiritual event in and of itself.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of beauty in that. There's a lot of beauty to be connected to something that is greater than yourselves. And that also has that sense of community built into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's ultimately, we're a social species. It's that sense of community and ignoring something that happens, that has happened to everyone that has lived, is going to happen to all of us and will happen, barring some crazy scientific medical advancement, to everyone that is going to live, right? And depriving ourselves of that connection with each other, that shared sense of being and community, that we're all going to die and it's okay to talk about it. I don't think that's, quite frankly, healthy or beneficial for us as a society.
No, not talking about something that we fear isn't going to prevent it from happening. When we talk about it, the fear mitigates.
Yeah, it does. I'm a pragmatic person, so let's talk about a hypothetical. We all knew from an early age, elementary school, middle school, whatever, that something traumatic and life-altering is going to affect each and every one of us at least once, if not more than likely multiple times. But we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to prepare you for how to deal with it. And we're all going to ignore it until it happens. Who would say, okay, sounds like a good deal, I'm in, let's just ignore it, right? It's like saying a tornado is going to hit each and every one of your homes, and we're not going to talk about what you can do to protect yourself, and we're not going to give you any resources to learn on your own. It's just, it's almost asinine that we just were so adverse to talking about it.
What do you think a society would look like where we openly embrace talking about death?
I've thought about this one a lot because it's a loaded question. Directly, I think funerals themselves and the business of funerals would take on a much less morose feel. It'd be more of a celebration of life, like some cultures around the world. Even, I think, down in Mexico, they have Dia de los Muertos, or to celebrate the dead. Mm-hmm. It'd be more of a celebration of life. This is what this person achieved, and this is who they touched while they were here, versus let's all march into a room and sit, and then we'll hug and not really know what to say, and then we'll go eat some food, and then we'll all go home and go about our day, right? It'd be a celebration of life. People would be around to support the person who's lost the loved one, because we're all more comfortable dealing with it. I think the biggest thing that would change would be people would be more keen to live their life the way they want to live their life. I think right now, looking at life as not necessarily infinite, but by ignoring talking about death, not necessarily finite, all of those things that people want to do but don't, they just say they're going to get to later, right? Mm-hmm. Through talking about death and acknowledging that it's going to happen to everyone and putting a little bit more of a finite nature to life here in this life, in this world, people aren't going to wait to do that. They're going to get out of the job that they hate. They're going to take the trip and explore the world. They're going to start the business. They're going to do all of these things that they know are going to make them happy. but they avoid doing because it's too big of a risk, or they'll get to it later, or, you know, whatever that may be. I think a society that openly talks about it and acknowledges death would have more life.
I think we would be less prone to take each other for granted. I think we would value our relationships more. You're right. We would value the quality of our life more. We might measure abundance differently, as not having necessarily abundance being measured by the material things we have in our lives. There may be a more multidimensional or multifaceted version of abundance that we subscribe to. Like you said, it's going to happen to each and every one of us. There's no, if something happens to me, I took the if out of that a long time ago. It's when something happens to me. It's when the good Lord, creator of the universe, or whoever you believe your higher power is, says your mission on earth is done. It's time you can start your new existence.
Yep.
And if we understand that, as we live our lives, we can lead a more fuller life while embracing that there may be something more that lies beyond than the life that we're living right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the interpersonal relationships, that really resonates as well, right? I mean, we've become a cold society to an extent, and acknowledging that we're all in this together, we're all on the same journey, right? Let's be nice to each other. I mean, it's not that hard.
No, it isn't. I mean, regardless of who you love, regardless of your cultural background, your ethnic background, religious background, we are drawn together. We are tied together by a single thread, and that's shared DNA. And if we can understand that, that it's shared values, and that we all share the same DNA in the process, the world might be a more tolerant place. We may be more tolerant of each other's beliefs and perspectives.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
So tell me, what tools or resources do you and Jessica share with others to help them try to balance grief and loss with everything else that comes with administering an estate? So tell me what the Dead Book offers to those individuals that seek your services.
Sure. You touched on one earlier, that the standard estate planning process that exists today of a will or a trust, just a few legal documents stashed somewhere. We augment that by, we've touched on a lot of them, funeral wishes, sets and liabilities laid out in a central place so that the executor has a good framework of where to start that process, items to bequeath, expanding the tools and resources available to the executor once their loved one passes away so that they can more effectively navigate that on the back end and deal with the grief and the trauma, right? And begin to rebuild themselves, like we talked about earlier. As we continue to grow, we hope to offer additional resources, whether it be through articles, state-specific resources, whatever it may be, to assist everyone in completing their planning journey. Beyond that, we hope to be able to connect people with lawyers in their area if they choose to go that route with their planning, so that they can have a person to talk to. Connect them with grief therapists in their local area. Sorry, my dog.
Hi.
Hey, your dog can join the frame if he wants.
You want to say hi? Say hi.
What's your name?
This is Rigby, everyone.
Rigby.
She's my baby girl.
Oh, she's beautiful.
Thank you. We want to be a resource for not only the administrative piece of death, but also the emotional piece of it as well. We're working that way. We don't have the resources to be able to accomplish it right now, but as we continue to grow, we're going to begin to implement these additional phases so that we can expand our offerings to a more holistic approach, if you will.
Yeah, I think the goals that you and Jessica have in mind for expanding the Dead Book, I was thinking lawyer referrals and referrals to other agencies that deal with death and dying and other individuals that deal with death and dying. It sounds like you and Jessica are on the right track, and I sure wish you well in your journey to reach those objectives. So,
yeah, we appreciate it. It's starting a company is difficult. A little bit of encouragement goes a long way with us. It helps us get through those difficult days. So we appreciate it.
Well, your intentions are pure. Your heart's in the right place. And I guess I'm going to steal a line from the Field of Dreams, build it and they will come.
Yep. It worked in the movie. So we will see.
We'll see what happens. So we've already stated that intention. Did you hear us, universe? We stated the intention. They're building it. Let everybody that needs those services come to avail themselves of them. So, Trip, if you're going to leave our listeners, our audience, with one thing today, what would that be?
We hit on it a few minutes ago, but you are going to die at some point. It's okay to talk about it. That's it. You're going to die. We're all going to die. Live your life. Take that trip. Be nice to people. That's it.
That is sage advice.
It's direct, but that's it.
That's the best kind of advice. You mince no words, and the impact of the message hits home.
Yep.
So my last question, tell our audience, tell our listeners what the best way to get in touch with you and Jessica, how they can find out more about your services, how they could purchase a copy of the Dead Book. Sure. What's the best way for them to do that?
We are on LinkedIn. We are on Instagram and TikTok. Instagram and TikTok, our content is based around us telling our story and our experience, and also some resources and other folks that we bring into the mix, and just our wider mission to talk about death. Our website is thedeadbook.co. You can learn more about our story there. There's a few resources, and the book is available for purchase both on our site and on TikTok. Drop us a message on Instagram, drop us messages on TikTok. There's contact us on the website. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, Trip. And thank you for being a valuable guest contributor today on the Teaching Journeys podcast. I had a blast talking with you about death today.
Thank you for having me. I have also had a blast, and thank you for doing what you do. It's an incredible mission.
Thank you. And you and Jessica are on an incredible mission too. And I thank you. And I know my audience will thank you for what you do as well. That is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.
Bye, everyone.